Gone insane, and you don't know what is right. Just tune into Unfixed and hold on tight.
We're back again tonight.
Oh yeah, man, and yours rhymed.
Yeah, I was ready to drop that rhyme in, but you had all the lyrics.
Yeah, you know, I'm a maestro. Thank you for tuning into Unfixed. It is, what day is today? Today is the 17th. It is the 17th November.
Yeah, the harvest festivals are coming on. It's time to winnow the wheat and to salt the pork and to eat the fatted lamb. I think there's an American celebration coming up in a few days' time as well.
Yeah, no, that's on the 24th. It's the last Thursday in November. And yeah, America's got a lot to celebrate. Actually, I really don't want to talk about any of that, to the point in which I'm talking about how I don't want to talk about any of that, which is really, really useful to everybody.
Absolutely. There's a big black hole on the globe, and it's over the ocean from here. Yeah. And let's not talk about it at all.
Big X. So yeah, thanks for tuning in to Unfixed. We've got a great show for you today. We have the Dublin Roller Girls from Dublin Roller Derby. We've got Val Demort and Maria Von Slapp, two representatives from the Dublin Roller Derby team A. They have three teams, Toby.
A fascinating team A, and the second team is, I'm guessing, two?
I think it's called team, what is it? There's the two eyes next to each other.
Oh, right. Okay, so there's some creativity there.
it's team II, I think.
And then Omega to bring up the last team.
So we're going to bring the girls on in not too long. As you know, here on Unfixed, we like to hit you with a rapid fire a selection of segments that we've cooked up over the years.
Get you sort of excited with a little bit of structured entertainment.
If you want to become a part of the conversation, do me a favor and send us a message on Twitter is probably the easiest way to go, and that's at Unfixed Radio. Just go ahead and send us a tweet. The producer, Nina, is standing by to let me know that someone has tweeted at us because I'm ignoring my phone. And we're all set up to make this an interactive experience, as always.
Yeah, we do have some birdhouses as well if you want to send a carrier pigeon. Yeah, but there is a cat here as well.
Yeah, the brick through the window the one time was that had nothing to do with. They didn't know we were doing a radio show, though.
No, they just didn't like us.
Yeah. So, what do we got coming up on this glorious Thursday?
We've got a couple of our old friends turning up again.
Ooh, familiarity.
Yeah, Andrea Lauren. We like her.
We do like her. And we've got 90 seconds with Andrea Lauren, and this is the segment in which she just goes on a tirade about some topic.
A torrent.
A torrent of a stream of consciousness.
A torrent of words. And then we have, and additionally.
Yeah, let's just play it loose.
Yeah. There's the publishers coming along as well because, you know, a man's got to get a crust, and Adam's been looking at selling a book for a long time.
I've been working at publishing a book. This is my second go with the man that I call the publisher. So, what he calls in, I avoid his calls on purpose. And then I save his voicemails, and I play them on the air for the listeners. This is my wacky, quirky, nervous in the service publisher, and I did not listen to this one. But I have a recording of it, and we're definitely going to check that out. I'm looking forward to that. I'd like to get
absolutely.
To that.
His legitimate publisher status is not even important. He's legend beyond that.
You can just, it's like Shakira or Oprah. You just say the publisher, and people know who you're talking about at this stage.
Yeah, that's like one and a half names. He's almost into one name.
He's at that level, Yeah,
let's not forget that there's also the scary news. It's not the scary month, but...
No.
There will be the scary news.
It's not the scary show, but there's always the scary news. That harkens back to 2006, and we always bring you a bit of a frightening kind of a. We wrap up with that typically.
Yeah. What else? What else is going on? Oh, did you mention the warm, wet place that we all like to go?
Oh yeah, the hot box. The most fun you can have in a hot box without risking an STI. It is Shower Talk. It is coming up. Today's topic on Shower Talk, which, by the way, is a standalone podcast that's released later on in the month after we're done doing the web radio show that you're listening to now, Unfixed. We released that separately, and you can find that. The Twitter feed is at @shower_talk. And if you go to SoundCloud, search for Shower Talk, you can listen to just Shower Talk, which, in fact, we endorse.
Yeah, I think the topic this month is other people's showers.
Other people's showers. It's about going to someone else's house, spending the night, and having to wash your little itty bits and doing it with other people's stuff.
Yeah, or maybe doing it by yourself, or maybe doing it with other people as well. I don't know.
So many topics to come up. That I'm really looking forward to future episodes of Shower Talk, but we'll get to there in due course. Are we forgetting anything? Oh, we've got the Southeast Ireland update, Toby.
Oh my God, Southeast Ireland, always a hotbed for politics, drama, and yes, shame.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? I think I'm going with your blessing, Toby. I think I might just go ahead and run. I'm workshopping a new theme song for it.
Roll the fucking music.
Check this out. Welcome to the Southeast Ireland update. It gives it a little more credence than it actually deserves.
It's like a BBC techno music.
This is where I'm leaning towards that. That's what I'm trying for. Oh. All right. So, okay. Down here in Southeast Ireland, I'm your hookup for all the latest hot topics coming out of Southeast Ireland. Today, I have my friends in my hands the latest issue of the Wicklow Times.
And off the press.
The headline reads, Wicklow officially a no-fry zone. After a long campaign, the no-fry zones amendment was finally adopted to the country's development plan last Monday, the 25th. No, sorry, 25 councillors voted in favor of no-fry zones, meaning it will be passed despite opposition proposal from Chief Executive Brian Doyle. Bottom line, 400-meter exclusion zones exist around schools and playgrounds in which fast food outlets and takeaways will not be permitted in all of County Wicklow.
Imagine all of these mournful takeout guys sort of waiting right at the 400-meter limit.
Does it not raise so many questions? Like, firstly, what if you already have one and there's a playground within 400 meters? Is not a small... I mean, for a town... picture Wicklow Town, for example. Okay, 400 meters is a significant chunk of space. And there's a lot of little parks, playground. What constitutes a playground?
Well, either the chippers are going or the school's going.
Yeah, what's more important?
What's more culturally Irish?
The playground, a school, or a McDonald's? So the meat of this story is actually that there was this like megaplex with like apparently a bunch of different fast food places that was supposed to be opened right next to a school, and it was viewed as exploitative. And this was in standing up against that, blah, 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 McDonald's, the horrors of American obesity. And so, sure, they passed legislation, which is, there's nothing more American than saying, let's legislate the living shit out of it. So now, if you deep fry a chicken wing with a, you know what? I just came, occurred to me. Like, this is kind of the same protections that, like, registered sex offenders are afforded. Like, you're not allowed to go within. So, like, a deep fried egg roll is the same danger as a registered sex offender.
I've just moved into the neighborhood and I'm going to make some kebabs and I'm required by law to introduce myself to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're not allowed to, people are going to have like little clandestine operations in which they just like have a coffee tin full of oil that they heat up with a little can of Sterno fuel and then throw in some potatoes, and then the SWAT team comes in and kicks it over. It really is crazy.
Is shallow frying allowed or is it only deep frying?
Like, I don't, I read the entire article. It does not, I'm not 100% sure, but there was some opposition to this.
Because there's the danger, no fucking fried bacon.
Yeah, you can Google the hell out of this. This, you would just, no fry zones for kids with a four. They are brand conscious, these people, the no fry zones. So yeah, if you have even the slightest inkling of walking towards a school, and you've got even a bag of cold chips, you can be arrested, I think.
Fucking pepper spray in the face.
Yeah, that is the hot button issues coming out of Southeast Ireland, and you're welcome.
Always,
for that.
Always on the edge of things.
Yeah, it's an up and coming segment. It's been something we've been nurturing for a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, it really requires us to go down and pick up the literature.
Sure. Hey, you know, I'm itching so much to hear what my publisher left for me.
All right.
I want to hear it. I really do. I just really want to hear it. So, like, it's selfishly, I want to hear it. I don't know if it like fits the flow of the show as such, but.
Well, whatever. I mean, is there some
gosh
flow?
Gosh damn it.
I mean...
yeah, is there any flow? Gosh damn it. I want to hear what my publisher has had to say to me about what's going on for him of late. And let's hit it. Let's hear what my wacky, quirky, nervous, twitchy publisher has said to me this time on the old voicemail reels.
Thank you. Well, this is your publisher, Adam. How you doing there? Yeah, I'm just calling because I'm feeling a little lonely and rejected today. I don't know if you know this, Adam, but I ran for president and I got one vote. I really thought I had a chance at winning there for a little while back in July. I even made a TV commercial about my platform, which was books. Yeah, but then when Gary Johnson made his Aleppo gaffe there, CNN got us confused and put up the publisher graphic. And so then the damage was done. So I've been trying to find someone to talk to today because I feel just weird and lonely. Right now, for example, Adam, I'm standing in a dark house somewhere, just sort of walking around. But, you know, that's okay. Honestly, Adam, most of my relationships are voicemail. I can remember back before 1986, when there was people. And then answering machines came along, and everybody just got so busy, you know. In fact, in the late 90s, I was married to a lady via an answering system. But I'm not really sure if I've spoken to anyone on the phone since 1986, is what I'm saying, you know? Well, I guess that's our modern world for you, though. What are you going to do? So how you doing? I bought a new cheese, but, look at that. It's a black jacket, ski mask, and gloves there. I'll just put these on because it's kind of cold in here. Walking around in this house. I'll tell you a story, Adam. One time I was in another house, yeah, and it was a pretty long wait because I guess the homeowner was on vacation. So after about a week, I heard the knob turn, and it was about midnight. And I had been reading a book called How to Read a Book by Mortimer J. Adler. And that's a real book, Adam. And as you can probably imagine, it was right up my alley. Now, the thing is, I had been reading so many books that week that I had developed what they call a condition called reader's arms. So my arms were locked at the elbow, fully extended like that. And so in walks this woman who finds me lying on her bed, reading a book there, and like that. And, who are you? She screamed. What are you doing in my house? So I leapt to my feet with my arms out like that and ran toward her to comfort her. I'm a publisher, I yelled. I'm looking for new writers, and I heard about you, but I wasn't able to reach you on the phone there. So, well, then she started swinging that purse around like that, and long story short, Adam, we both tumbled down the stairs, and then she ran to the kitchen and came back and started beating me with a frying pan. I don't know why it's so hard to find good writers, but anyway, that's how I met Maya Rowling there. Yeah. So, Adam, I did receive your package this week, and it's a book that's all blank pages there, except for the first page, which says "the," and the attached note says that you're starting over. Okay, this is something that we should talk about ASAP, Adam. Right after my appointment here, I may try to call you back, okay? But I hear the garage door, so I'm going to get in position, okay? I'll call you later, okay? Well, now, who left this baseball bat lying here? Someone's going to trip. All right, goodbye, Adam.
I'm starting to worry that he doesn't have any friends other than me.
I thought friends might be putting a little lightly.
Okay, that's what I mean, yeah. So I'm worried he doesn't know anyone else. But yeah, I don't know what he's gotten up to. Apparently he's in some clandestine home. He's just in some, like...
He's surviving.
He's in a safe house or something.
Let's just say that he's living off the land, and he's surviving the life of a nomadic publisher.
I worry about that person. I sincerely do. I did send him the note saying I'm starting over. I think I'm going to try to salvage some of the pieces about the skeletons and the Halloween theory and that kind of stuff, but...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, or maybe just sort of cut together different pieces of great literature so he can have a moment of joy in his life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I keep sending him at it, so we press on and we see what's going on. Hey, man, you want to do the history thing you do. You said today was a special one and that it kind of requires its own special theme song.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We're going to travel to deepest, darkest, see if you can guess.
So if we went out of our way to go ahead... What the fuck? I mean...
There's an old Australian stockman lying, dying. And he gets himself up onto one elbow and he turns to his mates who are gathered around and he says, "Watch me wallabies feed, mate.
Oh, man.
Watch me wallabies feed."
Yeah, Rolf Harris.
"They're a dangerous breed, mate.
This is
so
a thing?
Watch me wallabies feed."
Oh, yeah, he's a fucking winner.
"Tiny kangaroo down, sport. Tiny kangaroo down."
Okay.
And Winner has also come to recently catch all in its umbrella term child molester. I believe he's been caught up
a
bit.
Is that true?
In the news, yeah. He went back to England and they were like, "Fuck, you're fucking nicked."
Wow, that sucks. I mean, you shouldn't do that.
No, it's yeah. But it seemed to be a thing in the 70s. So.
All right, so there's a reason you're making me play this, and that would be that you are bringing us a story that has something to do... With that place,
yeah, something to do with Australia, and I sort of want to bring you back to, you know, not too far in the past, in the 1930s. Let's sort of think about 1932. You can imagine, you know, there's it's a roiling drama in Europe at that time. You know, we have Franco rising to power. We have Hitler about to become the chancellor in Germany. On the other side of the world, there's a more serious threat,
okay,
to existence. There's a lot of farmers living in Western Australia at this time, and the farmers are unfortunately having a deep difficulty with all of their crops getting eaten up and their fences being broken down. And the villain in this story is the emu. Have you heard of an emu, Adam?
Sure. It's four-legged. It kind of looks like a llama, sort of.
Well, I mean, I want to bring your mind more to an ostrich.
Oh, right. Of course it's a bird.
Quite a tall, flightless bird.
Yeah, I thought it was a mammal.
No, it's
avian.
And so there's tens of thousands of these things absolutely harassing the countryside, and you know, this area, all these farmers actually had been, you know, ex-World War I soldiers, and you know, they're trying to make a living after the war, and unfortunately nothing's working. So they call on the government, please, can you solve this? So the government comes and brings down the Australian artillery. So they bring an army, a division of an army unit there.
Okay.
They got a handful of Lewis guns, machine guns.
What's a Lewis gun? Is that like the hand-cranked one that I've been seeing on Westworld?
Not quite. A little bit after that.
Okay,
but,
of course.
And a truck full of ammunition, and they come down. Mm. And so it's actually quite topical.
What's his name? Attenborough in my head saying, "Birds. Beds right now," but yeah, it's a little bit darker than that, I think.
Yeah, they're enormous villainous fucks.
Beds. Sorry, it's not very.
What even accent was that?
I know, I'm sorry. I'm genuinely sorry.
And so the army comes down and they set up, they sneak into place, and they found a group of about 50 emus, and they open fire, full automatic with their machine guns, you know, just. And the emus dash back and forth and manage to scatter. They manage to avoid every single shot.
What? They didn't hit one single emu.
Not one single emu. Okay. So the war continues. And a few days later, they manage to sneak up on a group of maybe about 1,000 emus. And there they open fire once again. Bap, 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 bap. Thousands of rounds of ammunition going off. And they managed to knock down about 10 or 12 of them. And it was their strategy. They had the machine gun on the back of a jeep there. So they're chasing down the emus. Unfortunately, one of the emus' bodies gets caught in the drivetrain of the jeep, and the jeep crashes over the side. So the emus now have taken out a gunner emplacement.
Wow.
and a truck, and they've suffered 12 casualties at this point.
How big are these things again?
I got a little quote from one of the guys here saying that it was in the newspaper from one of the army guys was interviewed, and he said the emus have proved that they are not so stupid as they are usually considered to be. Each mob has its leader, always an enormous black plumed bird standing fully 6 feet high, who keeps watch while his fellows busy themselves with the wheat. At the first suspicious sign, he gives the signal, and dozens of heads stretch up out of the crop. A few birds will take fright, starting a headlong stampede for the scrub, the leader always remaining until his followers have reached safety.
Wow.
It was an organized enemy that they had to deal with.
Okay. Is that the end? I mean,
so after about three or four different instances, they realized they'd fired about 25,000 bullets and maybe killed about 200.
And then they just gave up shooting at them.
And then they gave up. Sadly, Australia lost the first emu war. The first war that actually happened on Australian on Australian soil.
It's against birds. Birds.
And if you'll have a look on the Australian coat of arms, the emu is there.
Really?
Yeah.
They earned their spot.
They're now endangered and protected.
All right. Toby Hallam's Dark History Corner took us to a very strange place in which people like really ineffectively attempted to mow down large birds.
Yeah. I mean, you think about all these other countries where they've really effectively managed to mow down large birds. There's the dodo and the moa, I think, as well.
Yeah.
They're all the ones I have on hand.
We're out of birds. I think it's time. I feel a little dirty after hearing about all those. The shots fired at birds, the birds attacking jeeps. I guess that's what I'm picturing.
It was mayhem.
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit dirty.
Okay.
And I think you know where I'm headed with that.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying?
A little scrub-a-dub-dub.
I think we might have to heat things up. I think it's time. I think it's time to head on in and turn it on. Hey, hello and welcome to another episode of Shower Talk, the spin-off podcast from Unfixed. We are here once again to talk to you about a little topic. Today's topic is something we like to call OPS. Toby, are you down with OPS? Yes or no? Simple yes or no, we'll do it.
Yeah.
S. S. So this is about other people's showers. Other people's showers. This is whenever you go spend the night at somebody's house or something like this, and you have to take a shower in their house. You have to use their towels. You have to, you know, maybe even look. We have to talk about the morality, Toby, of eyeing up their different, like, fancy shower products and thinking about maybe using a bit without permission.
What, the guest soap? Am I allowed to touch the guest soap,
yeah,
even if I'm a guest?
Thing, right? Yeah. You know, people say, sure, you can use the shower. Does that mean that you can use their, say, they're like, you know, their loofah sponge? Are you allowed to use their exfoliating, their scrubby things?
And on all of me? Can it go in? Can I scrub the armpits and the crotch?
Yeah, so those of us who are veterans of shower talk know that there are the danger zones, the red, yellow, and green areas of the body, and so maybe sure you can use this, but maybe only in the yellow. Don't go any further.
Yeah. That's amber only.
Yeah, check out Shower Gel Alchemy episode 1 on the feed if you want to know what the hell that's all about. So sure, Toby, any experiences having gone into? I can tell you a quick little anecdote about this topic. OPS, other people's showers. Spent some time with a relative of Nina's, my German wife. And we went into their very, very, very clean. Have you ever been to a German person's apartment?
Yeah.
By and large, very tidy spaces. And in general.
They're very, very fastidious people.
Sure. Let's just get full-blown racist. So, right. In this very, very clean German apartment, I was explained that if we were to shower, that after the shower we had to use the squeegee thing. You know, you've seen the squeegees for the glass walls.
Yeah,
I consider it more of a suggestion, or kind of like, you know, a tourniquet, a damage control thing. Not like a, you know, this isn't
in case something dreadful happened.
You know what I mean? But sure, they said like after you finish, use the squeegee and get rid of all the spots. And like they said it in all seriousness, and I kind of felt a little afraid. And so like after the shower, I was like firstly trying not to spatter the glass wall at all. And secondly, afterward, I was going painstakingly, trying to make sure there wasn't even streaks, you know. It was really
anxiety-provoking, and it made me tense, which is not where you want to be in the shower.
No, was there an inspection afterwards? Did they come in and say, yes, I can see you have done your best effort as stinking American.
However!
there was nothing as dramatic as that. But sure, man, it was a scary little piece. Also, I was down at Chad Keaveney's. He's got this cottage yoke. And there was like the shower drain was just in the floor. There was no differentiation between the shower like and the rest of the bathroom.
There's like this thing I've heard in England, them calling them wet rooms. Yeah. Like the whole room is the shower.
So I kind of didn't know like at what point it was okay to, I don't know, to like let the floor be wet. And there was also actually in this instance, he had like a big floor squeegee as well. And you know what? I'd rather just not deal with that shit. Do you know what I mean?
You know, windscreen wipers on the floor, on the walls, everywhere.
Yeah, I'd rather just leave it. Like I'll just wash myself with like, you know, wet wipes or something like this. Cause like I can't be dealing with like having to search for droplets and get rid of it.
Festival life. I gotta wash myself with wet wipes all the time.
I think you were talking a little bit about you were showering in someone else's house and the bathroom was carpeted. What was
it? Yeah, this is a weird thing that happens sometimes. I mean, at the very least, there's the concern about you know, like peeing. But then there's the shower. It's like this curtain is barely capable of keeping the water off of the carpet. Uh-huh. Who would install carpet in a bathroom?
Very, very misled, folks. I'm not 100% sure. We should have a call-in guest here for Shower Talk here on Other People's Showers, the episode 5 of Shower Talk, the hit runaway success spinoff podcast from Unfixed. Let's just see if we can bring Vinay in. Vinay, can you hear us?
I can hear you guys.
Whoa. Thank God. You can really hear
us.
Hey. Hey, man. It's good to hear you. Sure. Are you down with OPS? Have you ever gone and like stayed with someone who had to use their shower?
Yeah, I've done that loads of times.
Yeah, anything notable stand out? Any kind of experiences that come to mind immediately?
No, they've all been pretty mundane. I just go in, use the shower. Sometimes I have to borrow a towel. Sometimes I don't.
Right.
Have you ever have any particularly exotic sort of shower gear, like special kinds of towels or special kinds of foam that you need to use in your body parts?
Yeah, I mean, Vinay, how do you feel?
No, I've been in showers where actually. I've had difficulty finding the shampoo because there's so many bottles, and knowing which of the things I'm using is shampoo.
Right. So I mean, so what you're saying is, when you're allowed to use someone's shower, you feel at liberty to just go ahead and sort through whatever, take and use whatever you'd like. You don't feel it's immoral or anything like that.
Well, unless they've got like Dom Perignon champagne for shampoo, then right. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no one looking. I mean, the laws of gods and men don't really if you're to follow in the shower.
This is it. This is the really, really important point. Is the thing is, and even if you realize that, you know, I probably shouldn't be using this shampoo or conditioner or body wash or something that looks like it costs like, you know, €70 for just this little bottle. How are they going to prove it?
And when's the next time I'm going to be able to use €70 shower something?
Which is
even if you did use a €70 shower shampoo or shower gel, I mean the amount that you're going to be using is probably going to be less than €1 worth, yes. Right?
I think that's how. So yeah, that's how.
Like,
yeah.
If you've got like a bottle of shampoo, you know, how long does that last? Right, that lasts like maybe a month or 2 months, right? So even if it's €70 at a month, that's €2 a use, right?
I think that's a good way to justify the fact that like whenever you go over to someone's house, you root through their stuff.
This is the economics of showers.
Yeah, towels.
Yeah, I mean you can't extrapolate that situation because if you were to extrapolate it, you could say like, oh, if I go to a shop. All the stuff here in the shops are worth like $1 million euros. But if I just take this thing, that's
this
like
is just
5 cents.
How many loaves of bread do you sell a month? Like, and this one doesn't really count for much. There you go.
This is a whole new economic theory.
Have you ever, like, I asked both of you, Toby and Vinay, I'll put this to both of you. Do you ever, like, go into someone's and shower and use their shower as a guest and then kind of judge them based on the kind of the products that they choose to buy? Like, I'll just give you a quick example. I was staying with someone who I thought was a pretty smart guy, you know, professional in this. And then he had, you know, Axe body wash, you know. And so I kind of thought a little bit, you know, and I'm guilty of having bought that. It's cheap. It's fine. But I just kind of looked. I was like, is that the kind of guy this guy really is behind the mask? He's a bro or something like that. Have you ever changed your opinion?
Yeah.
Or like tea tree oil, you know, like they have like an all natural.
I don't think I've ever changed. Yeah, I don't think I've ever changed my opinion, but yeah, I've definitely made snap judgments of like, what might be important. In the bathroom department,
right?
Like, so you can equally say that of people's toilet paper, right? Like, but you can't really make a personality judgment. They might just like using really soft 3-ply toilet paper, right?
Right. Yes.
What about at the other end of the scale if they've just got like a roll of newspaper or something?
Yeah, I mean, I would find that incredibly difficult because
you have a sensitive area,
not very absorbent.
Yeah. How about the one?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll throw one other little talking point your guys' way, and that I was using the bathroom. Now this is just outside the shower; it isn't in the bathroom realm. And it was a young woman in Germany again, and I was told that if I had to urinate, that I had to sit to pee. And she's like, "You must sit down to use the toilet." So, I went in and closed the door, and then I'll let it be kind of a choose-your-own-adventure version of what you think actually wound up happening. Did I sit down? I don't know. It felt a little emasculating. Forced feminization or something.
I feel like the message to sit down to pee is sort of like one layer removed from what she's actually trying to say, possibly. Yep. So which could be don't pee on the seat or don't pee around
yes,
the because probably she's been sort of a victim of that a
victimized,
few times,
yes.
Right?
Okay. That makes me think a little more about her point of view. I was just offended and.
Yeah, I was offended too. I was going to use the word fascist, but
it's a little strong. you must sit to pee. You're a fascist. There we go. We're done. All right. We can't. This is a terribly interesting topic. Do you have any other closing thoughts about other people's showers, using other people's stuff, towels, borrowing towels, bring your own towel. You know, like Hitchhiker's Guide. I think that's good advice. Any problems? Anything to add? Any closing thoughts?
I tend to bring a camping towel with me whenever I'm staying over at friends' places.
Yeah.
But in terms of towels, when you're a student especially, people don't seem to have a spare towel.
Right, okay, wow.
Right?
I never thought about it, I guess.
That's some horror business there.
So we have to share the one.
So usually
it's still
when you're a student,
damp.
You have to share the one towel, yeah?
It's still damp. That's way too familiar for me. I would not be okay with that, I'm afraid, yeah.
And so you might decide, okay, I'll probably just use my, like, dirty clothes to wipe myself dry.
Right. Great. This is really painting a very pretty picture, and I'm really happy we went into this territory. Vinay, it's an interesting topic to me. I could talk about showering. I could talk about talking about showering forever and ever, but we do have to wrap it up. So thanks so much for being a guest here on Shower Talk, the show about talking about showering. So,
good chatting with you guys.
If you're ever a guest at the house, as I said, you know, you're always welcome to crash on the couch. I'll make sure to stock the good stuff because you're going to be rooting through it, apparently, just like this, like a raccoon is in a dumpster. All right, man. It's good.
Cool.
Good to talk to you. All right, you take care of yourself, and thanks for being a part of Shower Talk.
And
check us out at @shower_talk.
Thanks,
you take care of yourself. All right. There's not any closing thoughts, Toby, on OPSs, other people's showers?
Yeah, I think we really sort of got down to almost the bedrock on that kind of situation. But it did remind me about thinking of your own towel.
Yeah.
Because you get your own towel, it's out of the washer, and you sort of put it up and you use it. And initially it's like, this towel clean. And so then you wash with it, you dry a little bit, and maybe wipe down things a little bit. And it's like weeks later, but you still have in your head cleanly the idea that this clean. This is my towel. I washed that shit.
No, it's true. I know. I think I saw some crappy meme or something on the web. It was like, you know, go into the bathroom, meticulously clean yourself, and then rub something that you haven't laundered in like 2 months all over yourself. It makes no sense. This has been Other People's Showers. This has been Shower Talk. Shower Talk out. I have been, this is Top Down Adam Jensen. I'm here once again, of course, bidding you hot, wonderful, soapy, showery future with Toby Crotch First Hallam. And take care of yourselves and shower well.
Good suds.
Shower Talk. More popular than the root show Unfixed, I think. No, actually it's not, but
yeah, there's literally like a dozen listeners, but these special people are deep in our hearts
for certain. We as always we have to do Andrea Lorien. We've got to get Andrew on the phone. It's been like a rapid, really rapid fire today. I think we're moving at a really quick clip, or is it just me?
I don't know. It feels pretty smooth, but yeah, we've got a couple of lines waiting here, and that's line two.
All right.
The second caller.
Right, yeah. Caller number two, you're on the air. So we have to get, we've got to get Andrea on the phone here again. Here, just set it up. Andrea has let me know that she's got very, very little time and no room for pleasantries. She's also in a pissy mood due to some of the unmentionable crap that's happening in our shared nation of the United States. So we're just going to, we're gonna get her on real quick. We're going to do her 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien, and then we're going to let her get out of here because I don't think she's really feeling it right now. So let's just grab her and let's get this moving. Okay. Hey, Andrea, are you? Hold on. All right. So let me just get you in, and then all right, Andrea, are you there?
Hello.
All right, Andrea. Hey, so we've agreed that the topic, we're going to avoid anything political or otherwise depressing, and we're going to just go ahead and do a standard version, and the topic we've agreed on is going to be the Gilmore Girls, as previously discussed. So let's just, I'm not going to waste any of your time. Let's do it. This is 90 Seconds with Andrea Lorien, topic being Gilmore Girls, and let's hit it.
Okay, Gilmore Girls is what's right in the world. Like, and I don't even mean that in a nostalgic, like, early aughts were easy for us kind of way. I just mean that in, like, this was network television that, like, was smart and demanded more of its people kind of way. Like, there were references to Norman, like, Mailer that you would never get today. Like, references that are really great and that are really smart. And they had characters that, like, even today are revolutionary. But we're talking, like, 15 years ago. Like, Suki St. James and Lane Kim. And, like, Michelle, who you're never really sure if he's straight or if he's gay. But he's who he is. And now we have, like, a bunch of new episodes coming out, and we're all really excited about it. I mean, unless you're in Ireland, I don't know when you guys are getting.
All right, that was a little less than 90 seconds, but look, her heart wasn't in it, and it was time to go.
Yeah, that's okay. Andrea also sounded like she was a bit sort of drawn out this time, like she was in slow motion.
Yeah, no, she's a bit down about again what's been happening at home. So all right, so we've done the litany of segments, and we are going to introduce our guests right about now. We're not gonna wait around. Tilby, I really feel like we're moving at a super quick clip, but maybe it's just me.
Are we? I can't even see a clock around here.
I feel like we're burning. I think we're burning right through nap time.
Just wait for the supermoon to come up so I can tell what time of the evening it is.
Oh man, don't forget to go for a walk. All right, don't forget that we went for a walk as well. Okay,
don't forget that.
Yeah, we went for a walk and had some rum. So yeah, once again to the listeners out there, if you want to ask any questions of the young ladies from the Dublin Roller Derby, I guess it's not a league. I guess it's a club. Anyway, we'll clarify all that in just a moment, and we're going to bring them in, and we're going to bring them in right now. We are here with we've got Valdemort and Maria von Slapp, I believe, of the Dublin Roller Derby. What is it called? The Dublin Roller Derby Club, or
just Dublin Roller Derby?
Just of Dublin Roller Derby.
Yeah. We're a club, we're a league, whatever you like.
They're a club, they're both a club.
For everything you want us to be.
All right. And you're from Team A now. Like, I have a tendency of just jumping into things really fast, so I think we should just keep it slow. Toby, you know this about me, right?
Yeah, you always go straight for the jugular there.
Right, so...
It's not worrying at all.
So I came out to about last Saturday? Sunday at noon, and it was held in... Where was it? It was down in Greystones or something like this, yes?
Yes, exactly.
It was just last Sunday, that's right. And sure, I approached you girls and asked if you wanted to come on the show, and you very graciously agreed, and then now here we are. So, sure. Could you just tell us a tiny bit about, you know, just a full disclosure, this is not the first time that I had people from Roller Derby on. In 2006 in Pittsburgh, we had two girls from a team called the Bitch Doctors on. they were lots of fun. And so I learned a tiny bit about it, so I'm not a full-on novice, but... I still kind of, part of me expects there to be a ball. I'm like, where's the ball? I don't understand. I'm joking, really. I did think there was a ball at first, though, Toby. Toby, there's no ball.
But I think there's technically not a lot of balls in the game.
Yeah, there's no balls allowed in Roller Derby. That's right.
Very few.
Very nice. All right. So, sure. Can you just tell us a little bit about the team? How did it get started? And how did you guys get involved in it? And sure, just the basics, maybe. You know, what is Roller Derby about?
Well, roller derby is a contact sport played on skates. It's fast and it's furious and, you know, it's great. So the Dublin Roller Derby has three travel teams. So the A team, the B team and C team.
Right. How does that work out? How is that classified? And then
is one the good team?
Yeah, it's basically what we're asking.
The one that we're at.
Yeah.
Now they're all full of very good people. But our league is, we've almost 100 members.
Wow.
So
that's significant.
Yeah, I think the first training session for Dublin Roller Derby was back in, 2010? Okay. And I believe there was maybe four, six people added.
Not very many now.
So yeah, we've grown quite a bit since then. And we've got nearly 100 members. We have, each team has 20 people on it. We have we used to have tryouts. We haven't got those anymore.
No, but I've actually never done a tryout.
It's a kind of roller skating sport where you bash the hell out of one another.
Well, you know, we were trying to talk about the business end.
The boring part.
I don't know. I just felt like we got a little bit over the fact that this is an awesome thing where
literally,
you smash
literally,
each other.
Literally, yes. You're on skates and you skate towards each other and you try to knock the point score, the jammer, out of bounds and down, so okay. She doesn't score
strategically. Of course, it's not about bounds; it's about strategic aggression.
Okay, so
but
for
there's a batter and a blocker and the jammer, and it seemed a bit like Quidditch to me when I was looking up the rules earlier. There's these definite roles somewhere between Quidditch
sometimes
and American
fly.
Football.
Yeah.
Right. So look, let's just slow it down first. There might be some folks listening that really do not understand what it is. So for starters, it's in a circle or an oval, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. Oval.
It's on the flat track, as you guys call it. Mm-hmm. So it's on a roll, like a kind of like a roller rink, and then it's in an oval or a rough circle, something like this, and it's counterclockwise. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right. And so how was the game played? How many people on a team at a given time? How many people come out? Is there like an offense and a defensive team? Just start with the very basics, please.
To boil it down, it's a team sport. There are two teams, one versus the other team. You're familiar with that sort of style of sport. So
there is no ball.
There is no ball.
No ball.
Each team has 14 skaters.
Right.
And the game is broken down into 2-minute periods that are called jams. So for each jam, the team will send out five skaters each, or each team will send out five skaters. And one of those skaters is called a jammer. So the jammer has a special cover on her helmet with a special
star
that has a star on it. And it means that she can score points by lapping the opposing players.
And that's the only person who can score points.
Exactly. So the other skaters that are out there are called blockers. And basically, the blockers try to stop the opposing jammer while also helping their own jammer get past. And they're allowed to use various methods to do that.
Legal methods.
We've got a very, very thick rule book. So it's not just, you know, crazy all-out bashing, but there is a little bit of bashing. Controlled bashing.
Controlled. Right. And that's why we have refs. Non-skating officials.
Yeah, there's quite a few refs involved.
Yeah, there's about seven refs. Seven refs.
Yeah.
Oh, please don't kill me at home. There's seven refs that look after various parts of where the blockers are. So the four sets of the four blockers from one team and the four blockers from the other team form a pack. So that's the way, like, that's where the action where is, the action really. So you can only go stray so far, because otherwise it's too easy. You just kind of chase someone then. So you can only stray so far before you have to let the jammer go.
I'm not going to lie, it's a bit hard to picture. Now, I've seen this, so I know what you're describing, but I'm trying to kind of come at it from someone who has no idea what we're talking about. It's a tiny bit challenging to picture, I think.
You know what would really make it better? Coming on December 3rd watching it in person.
Also, there's a thing coming up. Have you guys got some details about coming up?
My notes.
Some of us are more prepared than others.
We're both prepared. I printed you a shot copy. At me?
No, self-deprecation.
So on the 3rd of December in Greystones, the Shoreline, we have a very interesting event going on. So our C team is going to be playing the Firebirds that are from Cork. And we have a winter survival. So wow, that is that 10
sounds,
teams.
Yeah, that sounds serious.
Well, I think I can explain it. There will be 10 teams. Survival. Hopefully. 10 teams going on. Like one jam is played. And whoever scores the most points gets... like goes forward, so all 10 teams are in competition with one another, right. And then you get crowned.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mini pickup tournament. So there'll be people from probably all the various leagues in Ireland
and
partaking.
I think there's some French skaters coming over as well.
This one is a co-ed, so it'll be guys and girls skating together and against each other. So that also has an extra element.
No, I don't think I've ever heard of anything like that at all. So it's a mixed gender derby.
Yeah. So wow.
Is that normal? I mean, is that something that happens?
No, this particular thing is kind of, it's like a pickup event, so it's not quite the same as
a gimmick or something.
Yeah. Okay. So when we play. I wouldn't call it a gimmick, because there are teams that are co-ed teams, but we're generally not a co-ed team.
Right.
Well, I think it sounds a bit sort of physical to be doing that, you know, all the time.
I think I thought that too, but then I have played with and against guys previously, and going into it, I was kind of a little bit worried that maybe it would be kind of a bit too much, but actually I was pleasantly surprised.
They play different, men and women. Yeah. Men play more with kind of the shoulders, while women play more with the hips. So
definitely.
I think that's quite. It's good that it should be so that you can access. You know, sort of mixed gender sort of teams. Because there's a whole sort of funny history that I was reading a bit about it. That when it started in the 1920s, it was almost kind of exploitation. It was very much sort of like pin-up girls doing this thing, coming to your town. You can sort of see that thing going.
I think it was kind of like at the start, it was sort of like a carnival sideshow
entertainment.
And then it came into my mind because that opening music was awesome, but it made me think of wrestling. And then I think in the 80s and 90s, it was sold a bit like wrestling.
Yeah, for sure. There was an element of sort of staged fights. And
was it?
With heels and heroes or whatever the thing is.
Maybe even like if you were discussing roller derby in 2006, probably that was still some part of it.
Yeah,
but
there was a clip doing the rounds not too long ago about how derby was played 10 years ago, and it's completely unrecognizable. Like 10 years ago was pretty much a race, and now it's slow and controlled and
more strategic.
Lots of strategies.
Yeah, I think there seems to be a lot of sort of established sports where they've been going on for so long that the understanding and the technique is so high that you sort of have to spend several years getting up to the sort of top level. So you think that plays into the culture around roller derby?
Oh yeah, too right. And actually, it's great that it's one of the only sports I know of where you can come into it as knowing nothing about the sport, and come in as a fully formed adult and actually go and play competitively within a couple of years, which is amazing. Because I mean, you can't do that with basketball, football, any of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, you'll be blown out of the water by whoever's been doing it since they were kids. So,
like most people who are part of the Monroe Derby have never actually skated before.
Yeah, because I think you have a thing called fresh meat that you do for all of the newbies.
That's what we call our starters course. And so basically we teach you how to skate. And importantly, we teach you how to fall safely, because you're more likely to fall before you skate. So that's where we all started. And then I've been involved about 4 years at this stage, and gotten a little bit better than when I started. But we teach you, it's a course where you teach how to skate, how to hold your balance, how to fall, how to stop. That's also very important.
Yeah.
And then little by little, we add contact in so that you understand what the sport is about. Like we make sure that unless you're fully prepared, you don't go into contact because you have to be able to hold your own body first.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of momentum and and wheels and pinching spots and things like
that.
Yeah,
you will go flying the first first time somebody.
I think yeah, you get up and then you fall back down and then you get back up. And then it's maybe like you fall back down.
It's like life, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
There's something I think of when I was there. Something called the suicide seats. Did I misread something? Or
no,
I,
that's right.
That's a thing?
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that's stayed.
I don't know. I think we're doing away with them.
Are you? Yeah, there was no one there. I mean, I'd be up for it.
It's basically the seats where you're most likely to, if a player gets hit, you're most likely to get said player on your lap. So you need to be over 18 to sit there.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Just because kid might get injured.
Sure, more easily. Do you have to sign a waiver or anything like this?
No, not to sit.
You might want to think
responsibility for your own for your own injury.
And for your children.
Yeah, that's it.
I think some of the leagues in the U.S., at least the one that I was speaking to back in the day, you know, and again, this is 2006, and you said the sport has really changed a lot in the last 10 years. It was kind of more maybe the belts were held in the evening, and it was maybe a more beer swilling, hooting and hollering kind of thing.
I think we would like there to be a little bit more hooting and hollering.
have it after 8 p.m.
We enjoy hooting and hollering, but at the moment we're kind of it's difficult in Dublin to find a venue that suits that.
Right. Yeah.
So so we end up having our bouts in Greystones, and the venue there is really cool. It's great.
That was
it suits us well, but it's not in Dublin, and we are a Dublin roller derby.
I had to drive. I have a car. It's no problem for me. But it was noon, and then my co-host here, Toby, and I were initially planning on going, and when I found out it was at 12, you declined.
I was like, that's almost a.m.
It's dangerously close.
Well, the dream is to have our own venue so that we could, you know, use it whenever. But it's as Maria said, it's really hard to find somewhere that will stay open that late, first of all. Yeah. And then sometimes people can get a bit uncomfortable with the fact that there's skates on the floor, even though we don't.
They're lovely polished wooden floors.
That scares the living shit out of me for the skates on the floor. Yeah.
I'm not sure a basketball court owner is going to want you roller skating around.
I'd say so. There you go.
But it doesn't actually do any damage.
We have references.
We do. We have
lovely
references.
People. We're responsible.
Does anyone know a warehouse?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, really, no. That's you bring up something really interesting. So they basically just kind of needs a home, huh?
There's lots of leagues around Europe that have really the leagues have their own venues, and they're basically able to run the games the way they want, the times they want, and it's great to have that kind of freedom. But we're not quite there yet. But we will be
eventually.
I'm relieved to hear that that's the way you'd like to see it go. Only that I like to, you know, yell at people and drink cheap beer and that kind of thing. So I'm happy to hear that you would like to see at least that happen. Now, it doesn't have to be exclusive, but I would like for is there no way to have at least maybe just one?
We have a dream. Yeah. That dream is one day
to win the Euro Millions and buy our own warehouse. Yeah.
Well, we're working on it.
So, no, frankly, yeah. I'm really encouraged to hear that you'd like, which is sad because it says a lot about me.
No, well, I mean, what we really want to do is to be able to have both types of event, because sometimes it is really nice to have it during the day because people can bring their kids and things is
also like we're looking to start junior roller derby. Okay. So that'd be like obviously that would be better to be held during the day.
I'd
say
so.
Of course.
So I like this idea of having the actual events that people come along to and having a sort of kid kind of thing. But what is the in your mind the show the thing that people come to? There is one bout that it's 30 minutes. It's an hour.
It's split into two halves of 30 minutes. Sometimes we might have a double header in a day or a triple header. A lot of the time it's I think the idea is to develop a following of fans that like to follow our progress, because I mean it's really funny, like a lot of the time we play abroad, so we might go to the UK, we might go to France, we might go to Germany, we went to the US last year, or actually
this
earlier
year.
Oh my god. And like we see over there that they've kind of developed this fan base where people are really invested to see like the success of the teams, they follow the, you know, same way you might with your local football team or whatever. So we really love to kind of,
it's part of our dream.
Yeah, that's what we're kind of getting
at. It's in the dream.
There's this real kind of showmanship thing in the sort of American style where the the skaters have these huge big characters, and I know you guys have your names that match up with it, and you know distinctive tattoos and your outrageous outfits sometimes that they're wearing. And you know, in between the halves, is there like cheerleaders? You have a bunch of guys, or you have a bunch of girls?
Vienna do. Vienna have the fear leaders, but we unfortunately don't yet. Open casting out there.
We did a roller skating version of that.
We so did at the Paris. Oh my god, I wasn't moving that.
We have been known to do strange halftime shows.
Girls, I did have a sorry to interrupt you. I got a question from an audience member, a listener. So she has said, every roller derby girl has an awesome nickname. What is the best roller derby nickname you have ever heard? I'd like to hear from both of you.
Voldemort
first. Just arbitrarily, sorry.
Oh, no, I can't cope with pressure.
Okay. Within DRD.
Okay, just get
within DRD. There's a good few ones. And I'm sorry, I'm still going to go with Dashing Trudy Snow.
Oh, yeah.
That's clever.
I love that. Hey, Snow. I think that's really clever.
Is that the young woman who goes by Snowy?
Yes.
She was overperforming it at the bout against, it was Glasgow, was it not? She was out there a lot. Was she functioning as the jammer that day?
The jammer, yeah.
Yeah, right.
That day and every day.
Yeah, she was hard to miss. She was everywhere. She was flying around.
She's everywhere and anywhere.
A firecracker.
Yeah, too right. I would like to give a shout out to Destroy McClure for my favorite roller derby name.
I felt happy and then I felt sad because what's his name is dead.
Yeah. Aww. You may know her from such previous bouts as. So the one thing when I was thinking when I first heard about roller derby that came to mind and people that I've known that have done it in Australia is deep bruises. Is that something part of the experience?
It can happen. It can. Some of us are more naturally gifted with easily bruised skin than others.
I bruise like a peach.
Yeah.
And my very first time scrimmaging, so playing like within our team, I had someone's handprint on my thigh where you could distinguish all five fingers.
Yeah, that's pretty rock and roll, though.
Yeah, it took a while to figure out what it was because there were like small dots, and then we kind of figured out that it was the hand that obviously grabbed my leg really tight.
So can they grab and pull you down, or is they desperately trying to stand
up? Well, your teammate, if you're on the same team,
teammates would do that.
That's where you get your bruises because like we use like a lot of the defensive formations that were called, they're called walls. So a lot of them would be braced for like for better to better brace the impact. And when you're grabbing your teammate's arm, you're really digging in. So sometimes there's, again, the hand-shaped bruises that appear on your arms. Or
friendly fire.
Yeah.
And there's a slingshot thing you do as well. Is that the where the jammer comes through and you fling off into the future?
That would be the whip as noted in the title of that movie, Whip It.
Right, okay, yes. That makes sense
correct.
Now.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think I read something. Don't blame the gun, blame the bullet. Does this ring true to you? Do you understand? Like the penalty, if there's any penalty, it goes on the person who was projected, not the person who threw them.
Yes, yeah, generally. But, I mean, sometimes...
My source material may not be the most reliable.
No, that's you're not too far off there, but it's sometimes you need a last ditch effort to stop that jammer getting out of there. And
some penalties are worth it.
Okay, all right. Sometimes you gotta just go for it. I will note that you guys destroyed Glasgow. It was humiliating defeat for Glasgow.
I can't quite believe myself,
to
be honest.
But I mean, you guys are so humble in your victories. There was no like ha ha in your fucking face. There was no like screw you, we're amazing and you're horrible. It was kind of, you almost felt bad for winning or something. Like, or was that just what I was?
You
like,
see, the last
winning
time
so well, it was like Brazil Germany in that one World Cup.
The last time that Dublin went up against Glasgow, it was pretty much similar, but exactly opposite.
Okay,
were pretty gracious about that.
There was very little gloating I saw. I felt there was little gloating.
No, I think the good thing about roller derby is that no matter what happens on track afterwards, everyone's like, I'm not going to say really good pals because you might not actually know these people, but all of that is put aside and then you end up having a beer together, you know, and not a problem. Whatever is on track stays on track.
Yeah, we kind of have, it's sort of like the common bond of knowing that you do ridiculously obscure sport that nobody else
needs
to know about.
I don't know if I'd call it ridiculous. Toby, is that too far? Ridiculously obscure?
No, I think it's probably about as obscure as those medieval fighting guys that we had on a few episodes ago.
Welcome to Unfixed. we have a niche.
And that is,
in fact, I'd like to see a combination between those two sports where we have people on roller skates in suits of armor and swords.
Oh, that cannot end well.
We have just invented the best possible sport ever.
I can't wait for the Ellen Page movie about that.
I do have a question. Like, do you have any rivalries with other clubs? Is the Dublin A team really, you know?
I wouldn't say rivalry, but there's certain teams that we end up playing every year.
I was going to say Paris.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say Paris. And their A team is very close to our A team, and their B team is really close to our B team. So every year we haven't done it this year, but every year we tend to have a doubleheader against them. And so far, we've won one each every year. And then we also play Hot Wheels and CCR. We play.
Where's Hot Wheels from?
Leeds.
Yeah. Oh, right. They're kind of an unusual team from Leeds. They all they train on these roller hockey skates. So,
right.
Yeah, like inline skates.
No.
There's quad skate roller hockey, which is another ridiculously obscure sport. But it seems like their whole league seems to wear these unusual skates, and they all have a really weird style.
Maybe just the one girl had them because she happened to have them, and someone's like, okay, that's the type of skate.
I think that's what started. Like, yeah. someone like more senior had the skates, and other people starting is like, oh, obviously those must be the best skates, so let's all purchase them skates.
But they're kind of they have a really strange style, so we play them pretty regularly, but it's always fun to play them.
Yeah, it's always like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, but definitely Paris are the main rivals, I would say.
Ireland v Paris. It's not a matchup you'd expect, but the one that I want to see. When will that be next?
Well, we haven't. Oh, you know what?
The route to be confirmed or something.
They're really excitable guests.
Yes, we are very excitable. There is a World Cup happening.
No, they're in our tournament.
Wow. They are in our tournament. Yeah, there's a couple of things.
Frenzy.
So, oh, God. So many things. All right, okay. So we're playing a tournament in Newcastle next March. And Paris are going to be part of that. So it's going to be 7 teams. And we are guaranteed... Well, we were going to be playing 3 games. Don't really know against whom, but Paris are one of the teams.
Oh, sorry, where is this being held, please?
Newcastle.
All right. And then where can people go to find out more and buy tickets? Is there a website or
you
Google,
can find
Facebook?
The Newcastle Roller Derby on Facebook, okay. And they have, I think they have events.
Well, more details, as we know, probably will go up on our own website.
Yeah, we will.
So, dublinrollerderby.com.
Right.
Right. That sounds like an exciting objective.
I'm sorry, I feel like I interrupted your spiel.
I got really excited there. Yeah, so there's 7 teams. We don't really know who we're going to play, but like Bear City, which is Berlin, Old Reiki Roller Girls, which is Edinburgh,
mm-hmm.
Middlesbrough Milk Rollers, Tiger Bay Brawlers, which is Cardiff, Paris Roller Girls, Newcastle Roller Girls, ourselves, and Central City Roller Girls, which is Birmingham.
And you'll be identifying as Dublin Roller Girls Team A.
Dublin Roller Derby is the name of what we always go.
Okay,
so
yes,
Dublin
yes.
Roller Derby is how...
Oh, but there's no idea to sort of, you know, make a more flamboyant...
Jazz it up.
In time.
Okay.
That'll happen, I assume, eventually.
Sure.
Flamboyant enough.
Yeah, totally flamboyant.
I think you definitely... You're capable at puns. I mean, just based on your own names. You know how to roll a pun off.
It's definitely one of the main skills any roller derby enthusiast...
Seems to be.
you pass the minimum skills test, and then how good is your pun making?
There's the toe stop, the baseball slide, and make a pun with these three words in 3 seconds or less. And this is under the guise of, WFTA, something like this? The Flat Track Association?
That? Yeah, it's WFTDA, so that is a terribly unpronounceable
name. It's not the best acronym I've ever
heard. Yeah, well, it's basically, it's sort of like, I suppose, the FIFA of roller derby. You know, they're
so utterly corrupt and
money-grubbing scoundrels.
We didn't say that.
I won't comment on that, but you can take your own conclusions.
Oh, nice. Okay, so I'd say just go to the Facebook page and type in Dublin Roller Derby, and I think you'll find quite a bit of information if you're looking for it. All right, there's one last thing that I'm not going to let you get away without doing, and this is taking a little walk down the stony path in the forest.
I'm not emotionally prepared.
To the misty place that we like to call the pet cemetery.
This is horrifying.
I
know,
like the guests groan in anticipation. the motto of Pet Cemetery is alienating guests since 2006. So I think
I was telling Toby outside that like I'm the type of person that my sister, like my partner's sister, she was 11, and she changed the channel from Bondi Vet because I couldn't handle it.
Oh, right, okay. So this is like, you know, perfect, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Bring on the tears. They power this show.
All right, so we're going to give it a shot. So I guess you understand the basic premise. All we do is just walk us through the time in which you had a friend who was not of a humankind, and then they left this planet, and just a brief synopsis of that. Thanks very much. So we're gonna check it out, Val. So Val, this is you're gonna take this one, is that right?
Oh God, apparently.
I appreciate your bravery.
So do I.
I commend.
I nominate Maria.
I think this was already decided.
All right.
So we'll just do the intro as is our want, and then we'll take a little stroll, and it'll be fun. It'll be nice.
Sure, fun.
All right. So here we go. Just a sec. Go.
Okay, I used to have a dog. His name was Rodrigo, because he was born in Uruguay, because that's where we lived for a little while. He was a black lab, and to this day I cannot see a black lab without getting all teary-eyed. Beautiful, beautiful dog. He saw more of the world than some people had. He had a passport, which was really funny to try to get his picture because his tail couldn't move and his tail was constantly like going 1,000 miles per hour. He decided he was a black lab. He loved playing in the water. As he grew older, he got arthritis, and he was this pet was like literally the fifth. I'm so sorry. Can you hold my hand? As he grew older, he got arthritis, and this dog was absolutely loved by all of us, and it was a little bit devastating to see him kind of struggle going upstairs and stuff because he was obviously so active, and he was really strong, and then kind of sad to see your dog kind of grow old in front of you. But anyway, the funny side of that story was that my mom decided that she loved this dog so much, we got him acupuncture. And apparently it did help. I was living in Ireland by that time, and they were back in Italy. But apparently it did work. He was a grumpy old man in his final years, and no matter how much acupuncture he got, he still didn't like going up those 3 flights of stairs because we live in a building that didn't have a lift. So obviously, because you know, the story wouldn't make any sense. So just stop me at any stage if I'm rambling. So the best part, one of my favorite memories is that he hated going up the stairs. So you'd eventually make it way ahead of him and he'd be there groaning, and you could literally see an old man grumbling like, oh, for fuck's sake, I can't believe I have to do this, until you got food out and then he'd run up the stairs. So he was very cheeky, lovely, lovely pet. I will forever love him, and I'm going to stop talking.
How did he die?
Just old age at that stage.
I
just
thought
he fell on the stairs. No, he didn't fall on the stairs. He did get hit by a car once. The car got dented. He was fine. He was a magnificent animal. He provided so many laughs. He died. He was just like too weak to kind of continue, so we had to put him down at 14. Though he had a good life.
It's a good run.
Well done, Rodrigo.
You were very brave.
I think I deserve like the prize or something.
Yeah, I also like the ending. Rodrigo sounded like a badass there. It was like, and death came and he said, no.
No.
Now I am ready.
Yeah. I have a bottle of homemade mead. That was our honeymoon favorite.
He deserved that.
Thanks.
Yeah, there you go. See, this is what we normally handle. Actually, we were doing a very
swag.
You got married on my birthday.
Oh no shit! Well, August 8th. There's a NoFX song called August 8th as well. You should check that out. All right. So sure. Yeah, we were doing in the habit of trying to get gifts for all of our guests because you guys come out. We're not able to pay you or anything like this. So we were giving people gifts. We gave a donation to the Jörg Stegmüller, who does the Dublin Event Guide. We gave what the hell else? We gave a League of Lube and a bottle of gin to Emma Doran. And I was looking and looking. It's so hard to buy for roller girls. Like, what the hell do you guys need? Like, am I going to get you toe stops or something?
A roller wheel.
A venue.
All right, let me look into my bag. Oh, I'm sorry, Scarecrow. I don't have a venue for you.
Yeah, well, you could use this room. I mean, like, if we could just move the table.
The carpet might prevent us from going very fast.
I think we could start a whole new version of things.
More rowdy things have happened in here than roller derby, I think.
It's true. Like, yeah, don't look. The motto of this house is don't look too closely at anyone's face. So, all right, girls. Thanks so much for coming in.
No, thank you for having us.
We're gonna be on the air for another, what, 10 minutes or something like this? And then we'll be out. So are you going to take off right now or just hang out for another
We can hang out, but I have one more thing to plug that we did not mention. We really like getting new people in our league and new people to skate with. And
you call them meat. Who the hell wouldn't respond well to that?
Everybody loves
fresh
that.
Meat. Fresh meat.
Best type of meat.
Yeah. I mean, you're not stale meat.
Yeah. it's not ground yet.
Yeah. Well, we are starting off our new season of Fresh Meat pretty soon. And beforehand, we're going to have a few open skate sessions on Sundays in Inchcore.
Right. I was reading about that. So what do you do? You just show up and you just kind of just skate around and you guys skate with them?
Basically show up and we've got some gear there. You can rent. You can just come along and try it out. See what you think and meet a few of us and see if you're into it.
Yeah, this is open to both men and women. So
but do you like actually try to like show people what it's like to try to break through the pack in order to lap somebody?
Or is it more mostly just from day one. Day one is usually here's how to stand up, here's how to fall over. Okay.
If your butts are not feeling bruised enough, then
and that's at three, so you can make that.
Oh, right. Yeah, that is. Maybe I can come up to that. I do recall roller skating from my earlier years.
Yes, to Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer.
Some people, they have all this sort of stored away roller skating skill from their childhood that they unleash again in their adulthood.
And then that makes us feel really bad. It's like, oh, look at them. Okay. They're really good.
So the fresh meat, how does one get in touch? Did you send an email, Facebook message?
Probably the easiest way to do it is either we have, the email is freshmeat@dublinrollerderby.com.
freshmeat@dublinrollerderby.com.
So, yeah, thanks for coming. It's been
wonderful.
Thank
you for having us.
It's been a delight. And sure, so yeah, if you're going to hang out in the green room, we'll be in and have a little chat and disclosure. And, we can talk about the Pet Cemetery thing and, we'll pack it back away, okay?
Let's just let Val have a few minutes to recover from that.
Seriously, anybody out there who's at all interested, do just go to About and check it out. It's a cool way to spend some time. All right. Thank you so much once again for showing up. It's been great. Anything else we're missing?
Oh, yes. There's one more thing.
Boom. We do have
You shouldn't have given us that chance.
No. Like, every time you say, and that's it, we're just going to keep talking. The other version of Fresh Meat is that we're always looking for officials and referees to keep us.
Oh, yeah. These are the boys with weird facial hair.
Or girls with no facial hair.
girls with facial hair.
Look, we have nothing against girls.
Yeah, so we're always looking for referees and non-skating officials, which are the people that are not on skates but still part of the officiating crew. So if you would like to join, and if you want to ref, because you like pointing at people and saying that they're doing things wrong,
right?
Or if you don't want to skate at all, that's a great pastime. Mm-hmm. You can email officials@dublinrollerderby.com, and Miss Fury will look after you.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right, girls. Thanks so much for coming in. Sincerely, I really do appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Okay. And see you in a bit. We're going to keep it rolling. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for checking it out. Thanks for your comment sense in at Unfixed Radio. We are always available to talk to you. Go to unfixed.filetap.com. And you know what? We also release the show afterward. You know, it's a live web radio show. But we also do release it as a podcast afterward. And you can subscribe on iTunes or anywhere you get your podcasts. And check out old episodes. We've had some pretty cool people on throughout the year. We've got two more segments for you. We got the Going for a Walk, and we walked down to the Bowery here in Rathmines, and we met a cool guy, Adi, I think. And he told us a little bit about making rum with his dad and all that kind of dope shit. So here we are.
Here we are once again. We are doing the Going for a Walk segment. With you as always is Adam Jensen. I'm here with
Toby.
I'm here with Toby Hallam, and we are here with
Adi.
We are with Adi from
the Bowery.
Adi from the Bowery. So we're down here in Rathmines at a new hot spot. It kind of looks like the inside of a pirate ship. So you specialize in rum.
Yes, we do make our homemade rums, and we do have homemade infusions in the barrels, and we have the largest selection of rums in Ireland.
And we just sampled some. I had the strawberry one. Tell me, what was yours?
I had like an orange and cinnamon rum.
Right, yeah. It was actually really good. I'm not a massive rum fan, and that was damn nice. It was damn good. So what does one do? So you start with a Jamaican rum of some type, and then you throw some fruit in there, and you let it sit for how long? I mean, tell us a tiny bit about how to make these concoctions, please.
Originally, knowing the idea of making homemade rums is just like back home. My father used to do that back in Mauritius, and that's why my father used to make it. So that's why I just wanted to have some place so I can put it in practice, and there I am.
All right, so you came from Mauritius to Ireland?
Yes, 10 years ago.
To sell your... What year? Wait, what year did you come over?
2006.
Oh, yeah, me too. My condolences.
Well, what can you do? I'm settled down over here, so that's why I'm just celebrating my rums over here.
So you've been making rum for how long? With your dad, you said?
I say, yeah, I'm 30 years old now, so basically for the last 25 years old, seeing my dad making these kind of stuff homemade, like home, like, you know.
And this is back in Mauritius?
Back in Mauritius, yes.
And do you have any, like, what, did you have a memory of one batch you made that you thought was really special that you'd like to bring here to the Bowery, try to recreate it?
Yes, I do. Actually, the first batch, that was the orange and cinnamon. It was something very Christmassy, and that's why I just brought it out, like, you know. That was the first batch.
So yeah, just before the interview, we were talking for a second. You said that, like, this is what you thought you really wanted to do for a living, was to make, like, nice infused and homemade rums.
Make infusion rums, yes. Make it properly spiced rum, not, like, industrial kind of stuff.
What the fuck is rum? Toby, you like rum, right?
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, with alcohol,
coconut?
You take some sugar, and then you put in some little bacteria guys, and they turn it into alcohol. But there's got to be more to than that.
So cane sugar? Or what's the base for rum?
It's cane sugar, and it's basically rum is made from molasses. So it's pretty much like an original kind of no chemicals and stuff going on. Like, it's pure alcohol, yes, and that's why you age it, and then you bring down the amount of alcohol in it.
But I'm just thinking about it. That's a bit like sort of gin, isn't it? Except with rum, you start with sugar, and gin, you start with grain. But rum is the gin of sugar.
Well, basically, yes. But wait until I'm gonna make my new batch, which is a grapefruit and basil rum, and that's gonna be something special.
When can people look forward to grapefruit basil rum?
I say people is going to look for that rum as from next week, 7 days from now on. That's what it takes. And then afterwards, we just speed up the process with it, and we're going to stick it in the barrel.
So on the 23rd of November, you can come down to the Bowery here in Rathmines and taste some basil grapefruit rum. Toby, what do you think about that concoction?
Seasonal rum, I don't know. Sometimes you hear about these combinations of flavors that shouldn't work but do, like strawberries and pepper. So I'm ready to taste basil and grapefruit.
As am I.
Well, I think the traditional pairing with rum then would be probably lime. And do you sell grog here?
We don't actually, not for now, but I'm sure that it will be in the next couple of weeks.
After this interview, if I ask for some grog, can you serve me some?
I bet you will get some.
Yeah, here with Adi. He's down here at the Bowery. This has been going for a walk. And now we're going to try to blackmail Adi into making some grog.
Yar.
I'm going for a walk. Yeah, we were checking out the Bowery, the kind of fun, cool pub down in Rathmines. It looks like the inside of a boat. We met Adi. He makes infused rums, and holy shit, man! I don't like rum as such, But that strawberry one, that was really, really good. That was
pretty
spot on.
passionate about it. That was the thing that was going to define his life there.
Yeah, I know. He definitely was. He was into it, which is great, right? If you find someone who's willing to kind of, I don't know, be the mouthpiece and kind of the presence for. I mean, they were really engaging, right? I mean, we were just like talking for a bit, and they were like, "Hey, we do a web radio show. Want to see if we can do this going for a walk segment with us?" And he was like, "Sure, fuck it, absolutely." And I think that's something that kind of builds a loyal customer base.
Yeah, it was friendly there. We just posted up at the bar, and it was a good time. And I hope that place sort of succeeds, because it was a bit sort of scummy when it was toast, and now it's awesome and pirate.
Yeah, it's your wet dream come true. Like, when I said, "Hey, man, it's been shitty because of the stuff that's been going on politically in the U.S. I'd like to grab a beer." I thought that like 90% of that hook was the fact that I said, "Let's meet at the Bowery."
Yeah, there was a lot of attraction in that for me.
So yeah, I know how to have an after dinner drink with one Toby Hallam, and that is to suggest that we go to the pirate bar.
Yeah, next time I'll do the pirate dress up.
Yeah. What is your? Do you have a pirate name?
No.
Straight the fuck up, no. Tell me, every now and again, I get a tiny bit creeped out. Shit, Jesus Christ, I get the willies.
The concern that something coming under your door might not just be a slip asking you to change to electricity.
Yeah, that's not what we're into. We're into something entirely different. Something a little alarming. Something that annoyed the shit out of Nina, apparently.
Okay. Our mysterious.
She said it's gotten better. She said that she's really happy that I've toned it down, and it's a little something that we like to call the
homina, homina, homina.
It's the thing that's called
the scary news.
Oh, the guy, he finally came. He was like we were seeing from a distance, and he was coming up, and he was
"Where's
like,
monster?
Oh, you're finally here.
Where's the monster?" I'm working on a thing in which, like, I just learned about effects send on board. So, like, you can send an audio signal out, and then you can put it through a processor and have it send back in and process into it. So I could, like, do live effects. That's step two.
All right. They're all the exciting things that we do at the end of the show.
Yeah. For those of you who are still listening, like, presuming that there's anyone actually doing that. Yeah, thanks so much. And welcome to the scary news, because it's about to get a little bit hair-raising up in here. Funerals, as we know, are grave experiences.
Oh!
Grave digging competitions, not so much. At least not in Trenčín, Slovakia, where the second annual International Grave Digging Championship took place this week. 11 two-member teams from Slovakia, Poland, and Hungary got down and dirty to see who could dig the best grave in the fastest time using only shovels and picks. Speaking of picks, grave digging judges are pretty picky about what makes a good grave. It has to be 5 feet deep, 6 feet long, and 3 feet wide. The grave digging contest is meant to be to put the fun back into the funeral industry, according to the event spokesman Christian Streets.
I just feel like this is a bit like the Great Polish Grave Off.
Yeah, we went to the plowing, don't forget. So we were like, for example, at the plowing competition. I saw photos from this event. And I'm telling you, dude, there is not a big contrast. One is plowing straight lines, one's digging holes. Anyway, to prove, the grave digging contest is meant to put the fun back into the funeral industry.
It only works on paper.
To prove he was less than dead serious, he dressed as the Grim Reaper for the corpse-free contest. "This whole exhibition is about getting groups of funeral companies together," he said. "It's about showing people how hard the gravedigger's job is." What a fun way to spend a Saturday. But some competitors think the contest was more difficult for them than for others. "Gravel and stones, about 20 to 30 centimeters of it," Gabriel Drafri from the crematorium Monlar in Novzamsky, Slovakia, griped. "The others didn't have that!"
Fucking controversy.
Slovakian brothers Ladislav and Kaspar Skladan, aged 43 and 41 respectively, buried the competition by digging a perfect grave in 54 minutes, according to Reuters.
So it's speed and accuracy, or...?
Yeah, the grave was also the neatest, judge noted, completely redundantly. They called it perfect. I am happy we won. It's a satisfaction after 15 years in this job, Kaspar Skladan said. I had to focus on speed today, but usually when the weather is nice and I can chat with my brother, it's a dream job.
Finally to get recognition for this job. Usually most of my critics are very grave.
Oh, yeah. I hold on. Let me think of a few. What do we got? No, I got nothing. I got nothing. See, this is why
that's
I'm
cool.
Just...
I've been thinking of that for like minutes.
Yeah, thank you. I gave myself like two seconds. To come up with two sentences. All right. Thank you, everybody, for sticking out the end of the show. And, yeah, again, get in touch. Be a part of the show. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/unfixedradio, on Twitter at unfixedradio. We are on the web at unfixed.filetap.com. We are on your headphones right this second. We are on iTunes. Search for Unfixed. We are on Stitcher. You name it. We are there. We are a part of your life, and we are always there for you. So hang out. Become a friend of the show, huh?
That's pretty exciting.
Toby, any closing thoughts?
Well, no, it's been pretty fun. We thought we were going fast, but we're going slow. So.
Oh, yeah. No, this one's been long, but it did feel really rushed.
Yeah, no, but that's cool. Maybe we're just getting slick.
That's a very positive spin. If you can hear me say this, thanks so much for listening, and stay safe, everybody.
Good night.